Radio.
The Joy of Love, Evangelizing Parish Through the Family and Couple, a presentation by Byron and Francine Parola at the Proclaim 2016 conference, brought to you by Cradio and XT3.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon.
No, we've got a problem. We've got one microphone and two speakers.
Fortunately, I've got a loud voice.
So we'll try it this way. We'll see how we go.
So thanks for coming down. Can I just poll the room for a moment? There's lots of choices here. Why choose this as a workshop? Because we'd like to orientate this towards yourselves a little bit rather than just talk about what we like to talk about. So why come here today? It's not because I'm tall, handsome and good-looking, so get that off the table. Why here today?
Well, I'd like to grab the families that come for baptism, and instead of just coming to dip the child and see you later back for confirmation, I want them in the parish.
Great dream. We won't help you with that. Next. That's great. Thank you. Yes.
I work with young families, the baptism program.
Yep.
So I'd like to, have some more information. Also belong to a team, teams, Our Lady teams.
Okay.
Yeah. And at the moment we're looking at the Pope's
The Morris
was teaching.
Yeah, I had trouble too. AL. It works for them.
Yeah, that's right.
AL. Fantastic. Anybody? Yes, please.
There's a lot of discussion in the parish and Ashes at the moment about redefining marriage, and I would like to go away with some answers to that.
Okay, good. Okay. Either of you? Together?
Did you want to go? Oh, okay. For me, it's just the topic of the joy of love. I want to know more about it and how it is involved in the parish and the faith.
Okay, and?
For me, it's having a young family on my own, coming to Mass and not having many young families there, trying to see our family who come to Mass and have that relationship. And, we can get to Mass. As busy as some families are, we can get to Mass. And just letting other people maybe see that and know that they can do the same.
Good. All right. Good. Blokes, please. Yes.
Partly, I guess the student's already answered because I feel a bit too let up. And also in our parish, a lot of families. And of course, families are a very first community where you can evangelize before you evangelize everybody else. So I'd like to hear.
Fantastic. Good. Thank you.
I think that part of the world's story when he says that the parish is the family of families, and the old saying is the church is the family is the domestic church, and if we're not working with the family, then we're not going to have much in the parish.
Thank you. Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
We've got a couple here. Yep.
I'm looking for tips.
I'm going to disappoint you as well.
three adult children, two Christians, one atheist, and I have two younger boys. I want to at least try and get younger boys to stay Christian.
Sound like you have my family. Sorry, there's one more. So one then one. Yep.
Our parish has recently changed Mass times from 8 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock to try to encourage more younger families to come.
Good.
And we're trying to move to be a more family-oriented
parish. I just like to say we've experienced the joy of love for 42 years. And
That's the great thing about men. We can fool ourselves. I am tall, dark, and handsome, and I know it. So,
couples growing in relationship.
Okay, yeah, all right.
In our parish, we have the children, the parents bring the children to Mass with them. Lead up to first time communion, confirmation, at the end of sixth class, and then see them again.
Yeah.
I want to know how we can engage them.
Okay.
All right. Nowadays, whatever happens in Australia is more concerned to cut the family relations. So that makes faith and their future in danger. So as somebody says, some tips where you can put some more energy and motivation.
Right. So we're going to solve same-sex marriage, fix your relationship, deal with people leaving the church, and give you some tips. Got it. Easy. How long have we got? Okay. All right. What are we going to do here this afternoon?
So we prepared a few thoughts, but we'll take on board what you've said and just tweak what we've got in place. I mean, we have got two more days here together, so hopefully some of the questions that we might not be able to get to today with you've raised, they will come up in other sessions, and we're more than happy to pick up the conversation with you. We have a stand down in the expo right opposite the registration desk. It says it's called Smart Loving. You can find me there. You won't see Byron very much because he's still keeping the home fires burning. But you can find me there in the breaks and things like that, so we can continue the conversation later.
So we're going to try and touch on do three broad things this afternoon. One is we're going to talk about a mindset for family in parish and how it's actually not something that we need to support and fix, but something that is a powerhouse for the church and a resource of the church. And we want to unpack that a little bit because most of the battle we face in life is actually getting the starting mindset right. And then from the mindset, we can actually do extraordinary things. The second thing we're going to do is talk a little bit about Amoris Laetitia. What has it got to say to us if we take this challenge? What does it do with that? And we can spend a week on that. We'll spend 15 minutes on that. And then lastly, we're going to try and get practical. What can you actually do in a parish? And your parish will probably be like the rest of... Our parish will be like your parishes. It's got good things and bad things, things you'd like to, you know, you celebrate, things you'd like to fix, people you'd like to kill, people you'd like to hug, right? It's family. So that's what we're going to try and do. Just to start, the primary starting point we need to adopt to make our parishes different and alive and evangelising is to walk in with a mindset, walk in with a mindset which says family is a gift and a resource, not a consumer of church services and a group that need to be serviced. And so think about that for a moment, because I could have started this off today and said, let's talk about all the problems facing families and all the support families need, right?
Doesn't that sort of dominate our thinking when we think about families in the church? We tend to focus on their neediness. We think about those families that are, you know, deficient or broken or suffering in some way. And that's one of our great strengths as a church, is that we're very responsive to people and families in need. But that sort of has come to, I think, in some ways really dominate our thinking. And if you think about the resources that we offer in the church, many of them focus on providing counselling or support or welfare and so on to families in need or to individuals in need.
And one of the great challenges we have as a church with all the giftedness that the church has had over centuries of monastic life, celibate life, religious life, is that many of us as lay people have grown up being the consumer of church services and looking at the church to help us, rather than an organisation that we are equal parts of and co-responsible for its future. And I can do the maths for you. In the 21st century in Australia, Archbishop Julian, you might know this number. I think we have something like a couple of thousand priests in Australia now, 3,000, 4,000. I think we have something like 5,000 or 7,000 religious sisters, about 1,500 religious brothers. We've got about 5 million Catholic laymen and women. If we want to change the church, evangelise the church, evangelise our culture, it'll be led by our clergy and it'll be supported by our religious. But as lay people, we are co-responsible in that journey. And our vocation, for most of us, is married life. So the question for us is, how do I live my married vocation, not just to be not get divorced, right, which is a lot of what people think the big challenge these days, but rather to be God's sacramental witness in our community. And one of our primary communities is our parish.
So we need to shift our thinking away from this needs sort of approach or needs mentality when we think about couples and families, to start searching for the gifts and to look for the gifts that they can bring to the mission of the church. And once we start doing that, we can start shifting the mentality. Because the danger is when we reinforce a needs mentality, is that they then start thinking to themselves. It trains them into a mentality and approach to church that says, well, you're here to serve me. What's in it for me? So when it comes to Mass on Sunday, they're weighing up. They become a critic of the church services. They become critics of the choir. And they're saying, well, I'd rather be down at the beach or at Little Nippers because Mass is not that much fun. Or I'd rather be at the football game than at services on Good Friday because they become a consumer of the church services. And that's sort of that's a competition that we frankly can't win. You know, if you want to be at the beach or at church, well, frankly, I'd rather be at the beach too. If you're thinking about, you know, just what's in it for me, I mean, that's reality, right? So we've got to get out of that consumer mentality, and we've got to stop training our lay people in that mentality by focusing on their gifts and not on what their needs are.
So let's talk about how we do this. The family is an evangeliser in the ordinary. One of the most extraordinary things we do as married couples is we create the next generation. And I just don't mean biologically, we raise it. We nurture it. We bring it to life. We breathe life into it. We grow them up to be responsible, faith-filled, hopefully adults. Good citizens, caring people. That's an evangelising work. It's a very small one. But we sort of forget that that's a miracle. That's us participating in God's creation. And yet we just think of that, well, that's what couples do, right? Because they have to. They look after the kids. And, you know, how much fun is that sometimes, right? Some days it's fantastic. Other days it's like, you know, what the heck am I doing here? So we just need to sometimes pause and look at the extraordinary in the ordinary. Our children's friends and our friends are evangelising opportunities every day of the week. So when people come to our home, what do they experience? When people, you know, when our kids, friends' kids come around to our house, what is their experience? And I don't mean we hit them with a Bible, right, and we sit them down and give them a catechist lesson, but what do they experience in our homes?
You know, I was just talking with one of the Sydney priests ahead of this talk. He's preparing for his workshop as well. And I was talking about the impact of opening our homes and how we're losing the art of hospitality in the church. In our parish, we've just renovated one of the little, it was a basement under the church for a parish meeting room. It was sort of pretty grotty before. But it's kind of instilled in our people a mentality that we have to have meetings there and that the homes are now no you know, not good enough or something. And I'm the chair of the evangelization committee, so I always host them in our home, and we've got tea, coffee and supper is really easy to do, and you know, that's, we've got a fire going in winter and whatever else. It's just sort of, you know, a warmer space. But do you think I can get anybody on our committee of about 9 people to volunteer their home to host the next meeting? In 3 years, not a single person is nominated. I've dropped a hint that nobody's coming forward. And I don't think I've been inside the homes of any one of them. I've been inside the priest's home, but I've never been, because that's where we used to have our meetings, but I've never been inside any of the others. And I think that our homes are really a resource that we're not accessing anymore as a place for evangelisation and hospitality. And it's particularly important when we're talking about family, because when you're looking at the family, the heart of that family is the married couple. And we hear the term the domestic church bandied around. But to give you a really, I guess, practical insight and image into that, if you go to the zoo to look at a giraffes and the lions, you're seeing them in an artificial environment. It's a completely different experience if you go to see those same animals on a safari in Africa, where they're in their native environment, they're completely wild, they're not reacting to human interaction, they're interacting with their native environment. You're experiencing those animals in a completely different way. And that's what it's like with a couple. The home, our home, is our native environment. That's our domestic church. And so when you visit us in our home, you're seeing the unpaid bills on the kitchen bench, the pile of washing still waiting to be folded, you know, that the chips in the cupboards from where the kids have been slamming the doors, you know, the holy pictures on the wall, the photographs that tell you who's important in our lives. All of those things are giving you insight into who we are as Byron and Francine.
And if you're lucky, the lions won't eat you. Because sometimes a home is a dangerous place, right? And we don't, you know. Yeah, and think of, so the point is that in our ordinary lives, we have a dozen evangelising opportunities every single day. The priest who married us made a really powerful point. And he was never a parish priest himself, and it was probably for this very reason. He said, if I was ever made parish priest, I would stand on the steps of the church on Sunday morning, and every time a married couple came into the church, I would stop them. And I would say, where are you on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of your passion and desire for each other? And if they were less than 8, I would send them home to the bedroom because they were not worthy of the Eucharist. Their sacrament was not worthy of the Eucharist. How many people look at the Catholic Church and they wonder what we have to say about married and family life? And where do they look for the evidence that we have the answer? They look at the married couples. And when we're grumpy and we're long-faced and we're dirt, you know, we're sort of, you know, trunching around the place, they sort of say, you know what? It might be okay what they say, but I don't want what they have. But when they look at us, and imagine a world where the world looked at us and they said, I don't get those Catholics, I really don't, but I want what they have. Our churches would be filled if they want what we have. So the evangelizing opportunity, the core evangelizing opportunity we have is actually in our daily grasp. And the moment we start to remind ourselves as family people, married couples, extended family, brothers and sisters, that our primary evangelizing unit of the church is the family, it is the greatest resource of the church for evangelization, because we have the numbers and we live the opportunity for it every single day. We've got what we need right there and there. It's that simple.
And it doesn't take a lot. I mean, when we go to Mass, we're very conscious of trying to be a little bit of a sacramental presence. So we sit together and we take communion together and so on. But, I mean, it's not rocket science, right? We're not doing much. Well, there's some women who sit behind us in the pew. And they don't say it to us, but they say it to my mum and dad. They say, oh, the lovebirds came to Mass today, you know, referring to us. But I go, we're not doing much, right? We're just sitting together. But that's the impact that it has. It doesn't need to be a lot. We just have to be warm and responsive to each other, I suppose, not just kind of attending Mass with that sort of tunnel vision where everybody else is shut out, but being aware of and responsive to each other as we worship together.
We were walking through the airport one day, you know, the long concourse you have with all the, you know, gates, and we're walking down and there's these two couples walking towards us, and there's one couple with their trolley going brum, 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 you know, down to the next station. There's another couple like this, you know, walking like that, and I said, pick the married couple. Now, you know, it was a brum, brum, brum. And then we looked at ourselves and we're going brum, brum. Yeah, we just have to stop and remember what we're actually are about. In essence, the entire family home is built around two people who have done something impossible. They've committed their lives to each other on a journey they have no idea where it's going to take them. And it's all about a mindset. I can pick the fault in my marriage every day, or I can be unbelievably surprised that she's still there. Right? It's a mindset game. Likewise with our evangelising opportunities. I can get up every morning and think, what's my opportunity to evangelise today? Or I can sit there and say, how is the church going to help my family be better? It's a mindset game. So that's our first opening point today, is just the first place we've got to start with evangelising our parishes is actually see the families sitting in our pews as the single biggest gift we have. Because they will touch people every day a parish priest will never speak to. They will talk to people that will never read a papal document. And they will do it just by the way they live, if they are a little bit more conscious of the way they go about it and the opportunity they have. Now, where does that take us with Amoris Laetitia? You know, sideways move, you know, what's this got to do with anything? I think this document's extraordinary.
I feel a bit disconnected from our notes. Can we swap sides? Is that all right? Or do you need the notes?
I only work on your right, you know that. this document's extraordinary. Who's read it?
Half.
Yep.
Yeah.
364 pages. Now, to be fair, of all the papal documents I've read, one, it's actually not that hard to read. It's not deep theology. It's actually relative. It's just long. But it's actually not a hard read. So if you haven't read it, actually have a go. You don't have to be theologically trained. It made sense to me. And that's saying something. But it's an extraordinary document because of what we just spoke about, which is basically how does family evangelise in the ordinary, is actually what this document is actually in another way calling out. Because what it's calling out is not theology, and it's not trying to address, you know, failure. It's basically saying there's two bookends here. There's a lighthouse. The church has a truth. The church has a truth and a vision. It's a lighthouse on a hill. But also, we all, every single one of us, live in brokenness. And so how do we walk in that grey area in between? And the church can't lose its ability to speak the vision. But likewise, it can't spend all its time just caring for people and not talking the truth, not holding up a hope.
And in fact, Pope Francis used these two images quite extensively, not exclusively in Amoris Laetitia, but it does come through quite strongly. And so the light on the hill is the teachings of the church. It's our doctrine. It's the ideals for perfect, holy living. It's the vision. And it's really important that we know what that is and we understand what that is and why we have that vision. The second one is the field hospital, which again he has talked about quite extensively. So this is how we minister to the wounded or to the ordinary person who may not even realise that they're wounded or perhaps living in a state that is not the fullness of the ideal. He talked a lot about accompanying people, and Cardinal Wuerl mentioned that again this morning. Another thing that comes up is this principle of a gradualism. Now, gradualism is not this idea of, well, we can, you know, step the law down so that we can pick how much of the ideal we want to aspire to. It's the principle of there's the ideal, but to get from where I am to the ideal, it's going to take a number of steps. And one step in the right direction is possible for me right now, but a leap from here to there just seems overwhelming. So it's this principle of helping people move towards and closer towards that ideal, that vision. He has a beautiful statement in there where he talks about, I might have it quoted in the notes here, about imperfect love, you know, but I can't remember it straight offhand, but, you know, where he says we can still value, even love that's not perfect, we can still value for it, for what it does have in there that is good and holy.
Now, he just described every marriage I know, including our own, right? Imperfect love. Just take that back into reality for a moment of our lives. My mission as a husband is to love Francine as best as humanly possible so that in her experience throughout life, the closest reality she had to God's unconditional love was mine. Am I going to do that perfectly? No. But that perfect love, that imperfect love, is still beautiful. And so we can look at the problems in everything, or we can look at the goodness in it, even when it's imperfect. And that's family life. Anyone here got a perfect family?
No.
No, that's what I mean. I mean, seriously. It's no one said it was going to be perfect. The challenge is to love our way through it.
So we've got the ideal and the reality, and Archbishop Mark Coleridge, this is a bit of his theme when he was reflecting on Amoris Laetitia, and particularly actually it was not so much Amoris Laetitia, it was his reflections before, ahead of the synod that he attended. He talked about the ideal and the reality, and nobody, I guess, denies that we've got this gap between what the church teaches and what's happening on the ground. But what do we do about that? Some people would suggest we change the teaching. Others would say, you know, just we've got it, we're not shouting it loud enough, or we're not clear enough, we have nobody who understands it, we just have to teach it better. But I guess the question is there a third way? And I think that's really what Pope Francis is calling us to ask. Is there another way? Can we do this a little bit differently? Now, this idea, this reference comes from Archbishop Christopher Prowse. We had the privilege of doing a talk with him earlier in this year, and he used the analogy of the referee and the coach in unpacking Amoris Laetitia. He said the referee defines the rules and it pulls up the players when they break them. He said that's kind of like the light on the hill. That's the doctrine of the church. It's around providing boundaries and the rules for living. But he said you also need a coach. You need someone who can encourage and support, somebody who can help us go from where we are to where we need to be and want to be. And he said, and that's in some ways his vision, or what Archbishop Prowse sees Pope Francis's vision for the church is to do, I guess, both of these roles. So it's neither either or, but it's a both and proposition. We have to teach and teach clearly, but we also have to minister and coach and help people move from, you know, the state of challenge and difficulty and brokenness closer towards that ideal.
So how do you stitch this together? Well, firstly, in the room, Reverend Fathers, Archbishop, you're excused from this one. Who in the room have raised children? Okay, so the majority of the people in the room have raised children. You're actually all skilled evangelists. You're actually all experts in Amoris Laetitia. Because you've walked the path between what's clear and right and good and what is the reality of when people can't reach that. Right? It's how we teach our children to cross the road. Right? We didn't start off by saying, go for it. We say, don't cross the road. Don't you dare cross the road. Then it was like, when we cross the road, we look right, we look left, we look right again. Then it's like, yeah, cross it when you run, yeah, be careful when you go out there. Then after a while, you don't have to say it anymore. Right? We have different ways of dealing with it as we go through. We're all experts in evangelizing. We meet people where they are to take them to a better place. So you want to find skilled experts on evangelization. You've all tried. We've tried to raise our children in the faith. It's no different from actually working with colleagues, friends, neighbours, etc. We take them on a journey and we share our lives with them. And Amoris Laetitia is actually, I think, reminding us that it's not about church doctrine alone and it's not about social services for the sake of fixing things that are broken. But it's about finding out how we head towards the light on the hill in the reality of our brokenness. And it drives me nuts because, you know, what is it? Where's all the controversy? Every document you write's got a controversy. It's either got a grammatical error, it's got a split infinitive, or it's got a controversy, right? So the controversy's here. What's the big one? Everyone looked for. Microscopes out. Synods were published. 365 pages. I've got to find where's it say about divorce and remarriage. Have they changed the rules? Oh, they haven't changed the rules. You know, ray or terrible or whatever. Divorce and remarriage. Divorce and remarriage. Sorry, communion for the divorced and remarried. Big controversial issue. My proposition is if any of us really understood the Eucharist, if we really understood what we were receiving, none of us would go to the Eucharist. We would crawl on our knees in unworthiness. Now, think about it for a minute. This is the body of Christ. But we turn up like it's a rite. It's a status symbol. I can get it. You can't get it. Oh, I'm better than you. You know. Damn it, I need to have it because it says I'm okay. We're looking at it from these wrong... So we look at these things from the wrong lenses. Parents don't look at their kids that way. You're all experts at dealing with this. You look at our kids and we say, oh, my God, I'm worried sick about them, but, God, I love them.
Right? No, I hate the way they're living or the lifestyle choices they're taking.
But I'll walk with them. I'll walk with them. We do this all the time. So that is the art of evangelizing. It's the art of walking with somebody and bringing them to the light. And it doesn't always work perfectly, but that's the art. So don't, you know, we mustn't underestimate what we actually are experts in doing. We just have to realise it's got a whole new area of application. And we have to get out of a mindset, and we're as bad as the next people. You know, the church needs to have better music. I don't like the choir. Well, you know, do something about it for a start if you don't like it. But really, the church has to do your music? You know, Father, you know, didn't like that homily on Sunday. Well, you know, really? Did you not find anything in it? Did you hear, which ears were you listening with on Sunday? The ears of criticism or the ears of challenge? So I think we've got the opportunity here in Amoris Laetitia in a very real way is calling us to get out of our comfort zones of either the church as just a field hospital caring for people, which a lot of us love. We have enormous social services, but we forget why we have them. Or righteous teaching, which we stand in front of or behind because we actually are uncomfortable with the tension of people who can't live there or our own sinfulness. And as you know, in family life, we live that tension every day. So there's two set starting thoughts. The question is, okay, thanks, Byron and Francine, that was really helpful, but what the heck are we going to do with this back in our parish?
Well, that was really unhelpful.
Really unhelpful, but let's get to something useful.
Yeah.
So how do we get some practical tips on this? How do you evangelise with the family? So firstly, we think there's a great calling for marriage leadership in the church. We have the largest single vocation that people adopt in the church is marriage. Most Catholics live their adult life in the vocation of marriage. And so to say that marriage has got nothing to do with evangelising mission of the church can't be right. because the church has an evangelizing mission. And if most people in the church in their adult life lives as married, then how can those two things be disconnected? So we have to start seeing as our marriages as evangelizing opportunities.
But here's the thing, if you're going to try and identify leadership amongst your married population, is you've got to be thinking and approaching it from the point of view of sacramental charisms. You're looking for the gifts that comes from their relationship, not so much the personal skills or talents they have as individuals. So we do this really commonly in the church, right? So we invite the accountant to be on the finance committee, or we invite the surveyor to be on the building committee. We're never even asking or considering the question about what contribution might their marriage charisms have in leadership in the parish. We ask people, you see how we do that? We go and ask people for different skills. Or she's a really good devoted person. She turns up to Mass every day and she's been in the parish for 30 years, so she deserves to be on the parish council. Just showing up isn't necessarily the right qualification. If you want to empower marriage, you've got to look for the charisms that come out of the relationship. Now, those charisms are part of the sacrament. We're promised when we make those wedding vows that God is going to give us all the grace that we need in order to live this life, this vocation that we're called to. But it's not given just for us. It's given for the whole church. The sacrament of matrimony belongs to the whole church. It's not just something for each couple. It's something given to the couple for the sake of the church.
So I can guarantee if I polled every parish council in Australia and I asked them the question, how many youth do you have on your parish council, they would think that was a legitimate question. They might say none, they might say one, they might say two, but it would be a legitimate question to ask a parish council. If I asked every parish council, how many married couples do you have on the council, because of their sacramental giftedness, you called them onto the council because they are a couple, they would look at you like you were mad. We've got lots of married people. No, that's not my question. I didn't care about whether they were a good liturgist and she was a good accountant. How many have you invited on the council because of their sacramental gift as a couple? So we don't even think of marriage, we don't think of the couple as an evangelising unit. We think of them as two separate people and they just happen to be married and they've got some skills. But actually their sacramental witness is the thing that makes them godlike. That sacramental witness, now it doesn't mean they have to be together all the time, but if we're not choosing people because of that giftedness, then we're actually losing that charism from our key decision-making bodies. You see the mindset difference? And it's quite countercultural. I reckon that's a countercultural idea. The thing is that
when you're operating out of your spiritual charisms or your sacramental charisms, because of the presence of the Holy Spirit, they don't burn out. How many of us are really struggling with burnout in our parishes? We've got people who have been running the choir for 15 years and they haven't replaced themselves and they're exhausted and they won't step aside because they don't want to see everything they've built up over 15 years sort of fall away to nothing, and they're burning out. Or, people who are doing the sacraments programs or whatever, they sort of do it with great intensity and passion, God bless them, but then they burn out. Often what's happening there is they're doing it from their own strengths and their own skills, and they burn. And that's what happens when we do that. When we're operating on our own strength, we burn out easily. But if you operate and minister from the space of your sacramental charisms and your spiritual charism, there's no burnout because it's powered and it's energised by the Lord himself.
And the other very practical benefit of it actually is we're a lot nicer together. When I sit on a parish council meeting, I can be forthright, obnoxious, argumentative. And Francine says, oh, for God's sake, shut up for a while. Let other people have
to talk. I'm under the desk.
She'll kick me under the desk. And likewise, Francine has the gift of sometimes speaking a little bit longer than I think is necessary. And I'll tell her. No one else will tell us these things. No one will say, oh, Byron, pull your head in. Francine will. We actually are better together in a meeting than we are separate because we actually know each other. We're not in the niceties and the formalities. We have a whole... we have a whole other relationship that actually makes us much better people together. So it's interesting, the giftedness of married couples. So I think ask that question for yourselves about how do you empower coupleness in the parish? The second thing I want to talk about is how do you find couples? Actually, this applies to anything, but it applies very much to couples. You want to get good people to do things, find a busy person. don't look for the married couple who haven't got anything to do, right? Because they don't exist. Don't look for the couple raising a family who's got spare time. They don't have any. Look for people who have got energy, joy, and love. The priest who marries again used to say, if there isn't joy present, God's not there. Interesting question about our relationship some days. So look for busy people. Don't come and say to people, would you mind helping us? Go to people and say, you know what, you've got a real gift and we need that gift. Be honest.
And specific.
You guys are special. You guys have got a real gift. We need you. And what is it about that? Well, why did you go to them in the first place? So if you go to find somebody and say, hey, look, we've got a real financial, you go to a lawyer, I've got a real problem and I need a real good lawyer. You don't walk in and say, well, I'm looking around for lawyers. Is anybody a lawyer? I might need some help. Does anybody have any spare time? I'm on death row. Doesn't really matter. I'll take anyone. No, I want the best lawyer. Well, this is our parish's evangelising mission. Get the best. Not the people who've got necessary spare time. They don't always come together. If you go for people with spare time, you're going to have a group of, and with great respect to myself and Francine and our parents, grey hairs. Who's got spare time? Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't have people who've got spare time in the parish, but don't restrict it to that. Go and find busy people. Look for people who are joy-filled, and look for people whose relationship speaks to you. And you know who these people are. You might have thought about it, but I can guarantee you, you go to people's places for dinners as couples, and you'll walk away with a subconscious, you won't have thought about it, but subconsciously you'll walk away with one or two things. You think, God, they're great to be around. Or you walk out and think, thank God we're not like them. You actually do that. That's actually your sacramental fingerprint happening. People are doing it to you all the time. They are, what we are rubs off. I'll give you another example of that. You go into anyone's family home, when mum and dad are at angst with each other, angry with each other, who's the first people in the family to get it in the neck? The kids. And the kids know it, and they're walking around on eggshells because they know mum and dad are grumpy. Why is that surprising? Why is it any different when we walk into work the next morning? Who's gone to work and think, God, what happened at home on the weekend? Right? Our sacrament is blasting out there. We just don't notice it because we're too inward looking. So find couples who have got a sacramental gift and get them involved in your parish because they're the people want to be around. Don't get old grumpy pants, as my daughter calls me. Don't get old grumpy pants there and say, we need you to be the to take on the youth ministry. Kids will love being around you. Yell at them as much as you yell at me. They'll really love that. That's not who you go and get to be a youth person. You go and get a person who's actually kids who want to be around. So think about how you pick leadership and think about picking couple leadership, not in every single role, but in at least one role in the parish. Here's a proposition for you. We think every parish in the country should have a parish mission team of married couples. A team whose job it is to look at their parish and say, where are the gifts in our parish that we can empower? Where are those great families, those great couples, and how can we infirm them to do more? Look around that same community and say, where are the families who need some support right now and who can we send in from the community to help them? And then look outside the community and say, what are the great resources out there that we can bring into our community to help us all grow? Imagine if every parish in Australia had two couples whose primary role in the parish was just to do that. They didn't sit on a committee, they didn't have to write a report, but they basically had eyes out to empower and grow marriage and families in the parish as they saw the opportunity. Do you think it would make a difference? No, don't play yes if you think it won't. Do you think it would make a difference? A few nods. We think it would be revolutionary. And I'll tell you why. We do a lot of work with marriage and married couples. And the research shows that the average married couple spends, on average, 30 seconds a day in intimate personal conversation. We try to get married couples to spend 4 minutes a day in two exercises doing that. And they all say, oh, that's pretty easy. And we say, well, you just increased your intimate conversation eightfold in 4 minutes. Usually when you change something, it's not the last 10% that makes the most difference. from going from 90 to 100%. It's going from 0 to 10% that actually makes the biggest impact. So imagine if we just had two couples in every parish who work together side by side informally. You don't even have to be appointed by the priest. You can just do this. You can go home and do this yourselves. And you look across your community and you affirm the parishes and the family. You affirm in the parish the families and the couples who are just great. And you told them. Imagine the shock they'd get. Imagine if you walk up to someone after Mass and say, you know what, your family is just stunning. We're just so pleased to see you here on Sunday. It's fantastic. You're like little beacons. They'd be shocked. They'd firstly be thinking about what do you want. But they'd be shocked. But we think that. We know who the, you all know who those people are. When was the last time you told them?
So there's a few other sort of simple suggestions. Things like St. Valentine's Day. Is a great opportunity for bringing a sort of some kind of awareness into our parishes. The Australian Catholic Marriage and Family Council publishes every year, has been for the last 6 or 7 years, little parish kits to help make some Valentine's Day an affirmation of marriage in the parishes. Celebrating major anniversaries, again, really easy to do. They could be in the bulletin, they could be called out, you know, the announcements at the end of Mass and so on. Parish blessings for the engaged. I don't know what it's like in your parish, but in ours, we have absolutely nothing to do as a parish with the couples getting married. They turn up at the parish house on a weekday. They spend some time with the parish priest who does the paperwork, but the secretary helps out. And then he meets with them once or twice and does their rehearsal dinner and they get married. And they could be sitting in our pews and we wouldn't know it. Now, when it comes to baptism, or confirmation or reconciliation. We've got posters up of all the kids who are making their confirmation. They're asking parishioners to pray for them and sponsor them. The baptism families, they were getting them up on Sunday, the day, you know, to come and be presented to the parish. But when it comes to married or engaged couples, they're just like this invisible presence in the parish. What if we just simply, as a parish, brought them to church on a Sunday when they... early on when they first booked the church and presented them to the parish. Wouldn't that just make that one little thing would make a, such a difference?
But what if you did something even more dramatic? What about as a parish, if fully resourced with state-of-the-art technology and skills and programming that didn't require you to do much or learn much yourself, you could do the marriage preparation for that couple as a parishioner. Just imagine if they were prepared by the community in the home of a parishioner, in their native environment, if the marriage preparation was taken on with the parish priest but led by a couple. That's not a dream. That's a practical reality every parish in Australia has the opportunity to do because the resources are there. So if in our parishes we had two couples, just two couples, who are looking around saying, what is out there that we can bring in? Who in our parish can we encourage to just do a little bit more, step up a little bit, just affirm them into greatness? And who are the other people in the parish who actually need some help at the moment? Because there's always going to be some of those. And we just quietly let the family do what the family does best, care for its own. I don't think that requires the Catholic Bishops' Conference to announce anything. I don't think it requires a diocese to employ anybody. It requires a few couples in every parish to basically just say, you know what, we can make a difference. We can just make a difference.
It's no different to running the baptism groups.
Yes.
Yeah, bingo. You're actually all doing it.
That's so obvious.
Yeah, I know it's obvious, but it's such a mindset shift for us.
Okay, so the resource that Byron's referring to for Marriage Prep is a program that we've been in development for over 20 years and was launched about a decade ago, as Smart Loving Engaged. It's a couple-to-couple mentoring program and to take place in the mentor couple's home. We have just this year put it online. So it's now available very cheaply and instantly. And there's basically two modes you can access it. You can just send your couples there and they can do it on their own. But frankly, if you do that, you're missing the opportunity to really engage with an evangelising opportunity. What we really see the great opportunity here is that while you've got an engaged couple that's registering for that course and working their way through that course, in parallel you could have a parish couple do the course with them, meeting up each week or each fortnight as often as makes sense to talk about what are we learning together. And in the process, they're building a relationship, together, they're building a support network for that engaged couple. Did you know that over 50% of separations of couples happen in the first 5 years? So those first 5 years are really crucial. We want to make sure that there is a safety net for those newlyweds, and the best place for that is in their home communities. And I think that's it.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, that's it.
And thank you so much. I got so much out of that. Thank you very much.
That was Byron and Francine Parola with The Joy of Love, Evangelizing Parish Through the Family and Couple. This presentation was part of the Proclaim 2016 conference on the theme, On a Mission of Mercy, Evangelizing Parishes, which was hosted by Broken Bay Diocese Australia. And for more talks, interviews and shows, visit Cradio.org.au.